Okay, next item, again, we're going to take them a little out of order. The next one we're going to do is the Salinas River Watershed. This is item 15, River Channel Maintenance Project Status Update. And we have with us today Dave Chartavoine, who's the General Manager of Monterey County Water Resource Agency, and his staff. And I think this is another great project. We're very pleased with the direction this project is taking. I'm sure it's not going fast enough for some people, but a project of this size and complexity doesn't happen overnight. But I do think that it is setting up for long-term success, so we're very pleased.
Good afternoon, members of the board and members that in the audience, and we thank you for giving us the opportunity to come here and talk about the Salinas River Watershed Stream Maintenance Program. This program has been a long time in coming, and the environmental impact report that supports it actually took a period of almost 4 years. And we are now actually doing work. And we've gotten great support by the regional board staff in helping assist us with actually all the other regulatory agencies. So today we're going to talk about a memorandum of understanding, and which I view is the secret behind the success of the project. We'll give you a little bit of update about phase one and phase two. The project is divided into two phases over a period of 5 years. And what's the definition of success? The memorandum of understanding actually occurred in is dated June 3rd of 2015. And it's among the Water Resource Agency, the Resource Conservation District of Monterey County, the Growers Shippers Association, and the Nature Conservancy. I think it's fair to say that if these groups didn't work together collaboratively to form this program, we wouldn't be here talking about it. The collaboration is to reduce flood risk, enhance groundwater recharge, improve water quality, provide efficient use of surface water, and mitigate food safety while improving wildlife habitat. The Water Resources Agency provides the coordination oversight for the program, as you can see. Grower Shippers Association helps with our grower engagement and explore and confirm participation and developing the RMUs, the river management units. The Salinas River is unique in that there is no public ownership of any of the river bottom, the river banks. It's all privately owned. So you have to engage every landowner every mile along the river. The Resource Conservation District, it works on the biological monitoring, which is required by permits, and also they help with the Arundo removal. And the Nature Conservancy gives technical and design support. And you may ask, well, why was this memorandum of understanding done in 2015 when this program has been going on for 5 years? Well, the program has been a work in progress, and when we initially started out and got the EIR approved, these groups were not working together, and they had to learn how to work together and how to best optimize each group's support. The project engages the management of 94 miles of the Salinas River. The phase one, There are two river management unit demonstrations for a distance of about 11.5 miles. Phase two, the additional RMUs design and permitting. This is a view of the Salinas River, and as you can see, the river management units are designated in different colors. The first phase is Gonzales and Chular, and I'll go through what's been done so far. This is a project timeline for phase one and what the status is. As you can see, again, we started in 2013, and we created the river management units and designs, and then engaged the permitting agencies and the public. And that took a considerable period of time, as you can see, a good 9 months. Then the 401 certification was issued by the your board, and the 404 permit was issued by the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Phase one is now in, we're in October of 2015. We did work last year, and we'll be doing work this year starting in October, hopefully. I understand we're still waiting for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers 404 permit. There were requirements that were in the 401 certification, and you can see them listed here. Basically, an annual work plan, requirements for training, because these are all private individuals who are actually doing the work. There's pre-construction work, pre-maintenance work, and we have to do compensatory mitigation for impacts of the work. The Water Resources Agency does daily inspections and annual reporting. You can see in this picture here the clearing of Arundo, but not clearing of certain types of vegetation. Another picture of the Arundo, and on the left it's obviously not cleared, and on the right it obviously is. And but phase one, year one, constructed 19 secondary channels, so when the river floods and rises, that the water goes in these secondary channels, and 53 acres of invasive Arundo were removed. Now, Arundo also utilizes a lot of water, so removing Arundo not only helps the water flow, but it helps on the evapotranspiration and allows more water down the river. The phase one work plan in year two is to construct four secondary channels, remove additional Arundo, remove sediment, plant replacement trees, mitigation, and do some retreating on phase one. We put this slide in to show the permitting process. And how, when we first started after completion of the EIR, and we said, well, how what do we have to do now? Now that we have the EIR done, what do we have to accomplish? And it became very convoluted and difficult to explain. We had to explain to our board what we had to do, and we finally said, you know, we need to go back to basics and develop a flow chart. I know you can't read this because it's so small, but I just wanted to show you how many steps and how intricately related it is just to get in the river to do clearing. On phase two, we've pretty much finished our 2D flood model. That was a requirement in the permitting process that we develop a model to show what is going to be the benefit and the effect of the work. And as you can see, we again worked with the RMU and permitting strategy development. We met with different groups. We've completed the 2D flood model, and we're in the process of the technical and design committee meetings with potential participants. And there's quite a public outreach program associated with this process, too. So we hope to be able to commence work in October of 2016. A little bit about the 2D flood model. We originally did in the EIR a 1D model, and as we went along, we realized that we needed a 2D model to proceed. This a Corps of Engineers model, and it has various parameters that are entered into it so that hopefully the model is as close as possible to actual empirical results. But the important thing that we have to, and this is a public relations issue too, is people think that, oh, this is great. You know, if we do all this clearing, we're going to protect against the 100-year flood, and that's just not the case. What we find is that these stream maintenance program efforts provide for flood reduction for floods that are less than even the 10-year flood. So there is a benefit there. So there's that benefit, and there's the Arundo removal evapotranspiration benefit. But this program, while I think is valid and is important, is not the silver bullet, and basically that I think is due to the fact that the valley is as flat as it is. When we're modeling the Salinas River, it often overflows at bank, doesn't have continuous levees, and it has multiple flow paths. And you can see in the bottom picture here the main channel and normal flow, and you can also see the bypass channels and the buffers that go along with it. Limitations, it's only good as the input data. It can't be 100% accurate. It's really deals with moderate flows and not catastrophic floods, and it doesn't simulate losses to the aquifer. We are doing, and it's not the Water Resources Agency, but the County of Monterey is actually putting together a very comprehensive, complete model of the Salinas groundwater basin. It's part of their general plan activities, and that will have a groundwater surface water interface portion in that model. So down the road, we'll be able to hopefully the next iteration link up some of these flood models with that model. The technical and design committee is very important because it refines the flood model and site-specific data. It establishes the river management unit boundaries, and as you can see, it does a cost-benefit type of analysis. For phase two, going forward, we have some funding sources, and the Nature Conservancy, the Coastal Conservancy, both in flood model and a climate ready grant. So that has been very helpful. Our agency has limited resources, and these grants and the outside support from organizations like the Growers Shippers Association has been invaluable in allowing this program to succeed. In summary, We continue to work collaboratively on shared interest to protect and restore multiple benefits of a healthy and productive Salinas River system. I'll be happy to entertain any questions. And I'd like to also, and I apologize, I didn't introduce Shauna Juarez. Shauna is the project manager for this project, and she has done all the heavy lifting and all the coordination with the other three agencies as project manager. And so she's been excellent in making sure that this happens.
Thank you. And starting on my left, Mayor Delgado.
All right. Thank you, David, for that project summary. Are the 11 miles in phase one, are those contiguous?
No, they are not. There are two river management units. So one is Chular and the other is Gonzales, and there's a distance in between.
All right. And is it available for tours or interested stakeholders to site visit them, to see them?
I think the just to clarify, I know board member Young and I guess Delgado had expressed an interest in coming out, and I had suggested that we do it during the year's second phase of work along those. If we could, you know, pick a time, much like we did last year, I thought that was very informative, being out on the ground. So if we could just work together to coordinate something, then I think that would be very helpful.
Right. We had that ceremony at that right. Arundo clearing, and yes, that was very good. The answer to that question is obviously yes, and all we have to do is get permission of the landowners to do that.
But I think it would be most beneficial for you to see after they get a little more work done to go out there and see what they've, you know, so sometime maybe around the 1st of November or something in that range. Depending on what the weather does, if it, you know, El Nino kicks in and it starts raining like crazy, there won't be any work, so we'll have to wait and see.
And then we do it in a canoe.
Yeah. And I'm glad that he brought up the point about the flood. I don't think we can reiterate that enough because of people's expectations and folklore that is out there about clearing the river and protecting flooding. So if it rains any significant amount this year or any year, the river's going to flood, and that's just the natural hydrologic process that's out there. So everyone should be prepared in the event that that occurs. And, you know, I'm sure we will hear from the public about what could have been if we had cleared the river. But based on all the work that's been done, that's just not the case, that clearing it is not going to prevent flooding.
Mr. Harris, I don't have fancy Italian cowboy boots, but I do have waders.
Good.
So a little bit of flooding is okay.
All right.
The difference between the 401 cert and the 404 cert, the 401 is what we issue, correct?
401 is what we issue, 404 yeah. is what
and
we
what's, what's the
So
difference?
I'm going to ask Phil to come up to the podium because he's here, and since he traveled all this distance, I want to put him to use.
The 401 is this on? Yeah. The 401 is us certifying that the federal permit, the 404 permit, is going to comply with state water quality standards. So the 404 permit is a permit the Army Corps issues for discharges of dredge and fill material. And then we're certifying that permit that the Army Corps is issuing is going to comply with state law.
But they're not discharging any fill. They're removing material.
Well, the movement of it gets down to the definitions of what dredge and fill material is, but the movement of sediment in a substantial manner with mechanized land clearing equipment amounts to a discharge of dredge and fill material.
Okay. And so how is fishery habitat protected or enhanced through this process of the removal of Arundo and moving soil and earth around?
So the way that this...
Can you give your name? That way it stays on the record.
So my name is Shauna Juarez from the Monterey County Water Resources Agency. So the way that we designed the demonstration project and the way we're also looking at phase two is mimicking the natural system and looking at the braided nature of the Salinas River. And so in so doing that, we developed secondary channels. And these secondary channels, although they must have some type of hydraulic connection to the main active channel, they then go through areas. Typically, we found areas of disturbed kind of areas or rundo-infested areas or other low-quality kind of vegetated areas that these channels could parallel the active channel and be activated in like a 2 to 3 year storm event. And so the water is moving, it's spreading out velocity across the entire cross-section, which has a benefit of reducing erosion, and it also allows fish to go into a lower velocity area to travel. So we are, like I said, trying to mimic that natural system in our design.
And are you guys utilizing any fishery biologists to inform you on how to design these secondary channels?
So we have a pretty robust technical team of different type of ecologists, biologists, hydrologists, engineers. We have quite a few people on the technical team, and then we've been meeting with all of the regulatory agencies. So we're working very closely with NOAA Fisheries to make sure that we're getting their needs met as well.
Okay. On my left, I'm at my right, Dr. Hunter.
Just a short question. I probably heard this, but if you said it, my apologies. How many landowners are involved in the current phase? You have phase one?
Phase one is approximately 15 landowners, and phase two will be, you know, potentially over 100 different properties. It gets complicated because not only do landowners have to be participating in this with the permit requirements, we also have municipalities, lessees, easement holders, so it gets a little bit complicated.
So small scale with 15, do you feel that the process that's been established and agreements will be able to scale up to the next level, or is that yet to be further refined so that it obviously needs to be done in a coordinated, systematic way? Do you see that shift forward in preparation now, or something yet to come?
It is pretty scalable. So far we've gone through, like Dave said, the technical design committees. And so how we organized that was through five additional river management units. Some of them are smaller and some of them are larger depending on their complexity, but they are based on, you know, the different hydraulic conditions and vegetated conditions that are throughout the river, throughout the 92 miles that we work in. So what we found so far is that it is scalable. The flood models and covering 100 miles of river. So we can look at it holistically. We look at the entire thing, and then we kind of zoom in on river management units and work through those significant and very specific issues, small groups at a time to make it more manageable.
And are there any costs that are accrued to the landowners or the lessees or others who have to play a role in at least to the minimum to agreeing to the design and so forth?
So the one slide did show some of the costs that we're spending right now, but there are definitely other people contributing money. So like you mentioned, the landowners, the participants, they are also incurring an expense to help provide the site-specific data and the design for the permitting. They also perform the work, and so that's also an expense that they're incurring. And other organizations like the Grower Shippers Association and others are also chipping in.
And so is there a quality assurance component to the varying technical capacity of each of these individual entities to meet the criteria as designed? Is that going forward in a pretty clear manner for everybody? Everybody knows what the standards are and who will be inspecting and those kinds of process dimensions.
So each agency has a different role, and so the Water Resources Agency is looking at that overall compliance with the 404 and the 401. certification. And so we do have, you know, we've worked with regional board staff and we work with the Corps on making sure that we have, you know, pretty robust reporting and monitoring network. We are using some really state-of-the-art ways to collect data while we're in the field so that it's very clear, you know, pretty much real time, like areas that we're avoiding, areas that we're impacting. We're reporting that back so we can always be monitoring to make sure it's still compliant with our program objectives as well as the permit, because we have additional guidelines that the agency has adopted that we also think are very critical to adhere to. So that's one of my roles, is that administering it, making sure everything's compliant, and then I report back. And we've done site visits and brought people out, and it's really good to see what's actually happening on the ground versus what it sounds like in paper. They definitely are two different. You know, it's hard to visualize what the Salinas River looks like. It is such a unique system. And so one good thing is that there's very good vantage points from some of the river crossings. So Chular and Gonzales River bridges, you can actually see quite a bit. And you're up higher, so it's great. We also have aerial photos that we try to put everything on our website so people are informed of what's happening.
So my last question is, given that role, that oversight, is phase one or out of phase one, are you making any major changes in the process going forward? Are there improvements that you are already seeing could facilitate this for all the participants?
Yeah, you know, we did lessons learned meetings with not only the stakeholders, but also the regulatory agencies and the participants after our first demonstration season. And we did identify some things that we could probably do better. It resulted in the regional board issuing an amended 401 certification. So it helped clarify some things that, you know, worked for everybody. So we really thank the timeliness of that happening. We also decided to do training more in the field so we could show people, you know, this was great work. This is what we're looking for. This is how you do it. And so we could actually have those, you know, since we have a season already that's taken, happened, we can go look out in the field. So we did make some modifications like those.
Well, good. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Johnston?
I just have one question. As Board Member Delgado pointed out, a river management unit 5 in Chular and 4 in Gonzales are not contiguous. Is that because the channel is just fine between them, or the landowners weren't interested, or what's that about?
You know, that's a good question. When we first did the demonstration project, we had a lot more show of hands than we thought. More people wanted to work with the Nature Conservancy than we could have imagined, which was great news for us. It also meant that we weren't quite ready to handle such, you know, so much participation. And so Chular and Gonzales got very close together. The intention was that there would be more space between them. What we're doing is we're re-looking at that area, that gap, to see if there is something that needs to be addressed in that area. So that would be addressed in phase two. And we'll have to call it, we're starting to call it like Gonzales North or something. It needs its own unique name.
All right. And my two quick questions. First one, when you dispose of the Ronda, you mulch it?
With this drought, we are mulching it. It's not, it wouldn't be taking the herbicide as it is. So we mulch it. We mulched the 53 acres last year, and some of it has resprouted and grown back. And so if it's still green and leafy when we go back in October 1st, we will apply herbicide treatment until we reach those target eradication.
Okay, values. And that was, you answered part of my second question, which, as you know, Arundo is fairly stubborn, and it usually takes up to 3 years to finally get rid of it. So I assume you do. What's your quantitative expectation here? 80% eradication or 90%? Because some of it is going to grow back.
Yeah, so it's growing back much smaller and thinner again due to the drought. So this is a really great year to get in and to spray it. But mowing it alone does not eradicate it, but it helps us. As the picture showed, you couldn't even get into the area to treat it. So mulching was required to even access the area. So I think our goal is 99% eradication in 5 years.
Okay. You answered my question. Thank you very much. So appreciate that.
Yeah, you really have to go out and, I mean, to really, she's correct, you cannot imagine how dense this is you get out there. And
I can imagine it because I have a property where we removed our Rondo and I found a Volkswagen minibus. So
exactly.
Well, it's a great way, a great place to dispose of executive officers that you wanted to dispose of. You know, you throw them under the mulcher and no one will ever know.
So after these words, we do have a couple of speaker cards on the – see, I'm kind of moving on. I'm ignoring that comment. We have a speaker card from Mr. Schimmick, who requested 6 minutes.
We have a presentation for this, and we're missing our presentation guide.
Oh, we're trying to figure out what that sound is, I think.
Okay. So do you want me to –
if I can find it.
Go second, maybe, or?
I think while we're waiting to do that, I want to say that I think the greatest benefit of this program is it's establishing a structure or a framework to manage the river long term that didn't exist before. So there's real value in that.
That's excellent point. What we didn't cover in the presentation, this is phase one and phase two of the stream maintenance program. But what we're talking with our project partners about is to have a long-term stream management program that's even more holistic. So we have to first get through this, but we are discussing that, and we think that that's needed for the long term. And I also, you know, think that that helps address your question, Mr. Wolf, too.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schimmick, and 6 minutes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Steve Schimmick, the Otter Project in Monterey Coast Keeper. So, again, a series of fairly quick slides. I want to make the point that channel maintenance has been getting better. We are so close to supporting this project that I do think that we can get there. So, first of all, in the 1960s, they used to actually fly over the river and spray it with defoliants from planes. And then there was a lawsuit from California Native Plant Society, and that was stopped. Then the 95 and 98 floods happened, and the feeling that there was a need for channel maintenance happened. Then there was a channel maintenance program, and I'll talk about that a little bit. And then there's today's proposal. I'm actually very heartened and glad to hear so many people talk about the relationship between channel maintenance and the fact that you know, it will not stop the 1995, the 1998 floods. I cannot tell you how many times I've run into people that have said, you know, if the 95 and 98 flood happens again, and you know, it's going to be hell unless we get in there and do the channel maintenance. That's USGS data, and looking at that's cubic feet per second. 100,000 CFS were coming down in 1995. That is 10 times the flow of the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon, 10 times the flow. You're just not going to deal with channel maintenance. I mean, that's well beyond anything that channel maintenance could ever do. So when you hear people talk like that, it's simple rhetoric. This is the old program, and I may have seen this slide before. And what they did was essentially ream out the channel, bulldoze it, leave 10 foot of buffer along what they thought would be the channel. The problem is, and this does relate to the current program, the problem is that the channel moves. And so here's an example where the channel is at lower piece down there, and you can see that where they left the 10-foot buffer, but then the channel broke through in that one little spot and simply moved. And so it's now going over barren sand. That could happen again. You know, they plan all these channels and these secondary channels, and then, frankly, the river can just move over into a new place. And so the question, and this has been answered, does even the most radical channel maintenance do anything? So here you've got the most maintained stretch of river during the old program. Guess where the most dramatic flooding was? The exact same, the spot that was most maintained flooded. And I think that this is a lesson. It's a lesson of what our expectations are, but here's where I come from. It's also a lesson of how much are we willing to give up to get something that really will have some benefit, but not a lot. So we're into this cost-benefit kind of weighing, and that's what I want you to think about. Here's the real problem. This is a 1989 slide taken in near the Gonzales Bridge. And those arrows are just markers. They're not pointing at anything. They're pointing at the edge of the river channel, okay, in 1989. Here's the edge, so the same, the markers will not move. Here's 2012. So the question was, are you going to mimic the way it used to be for fisheries? Well, you can't because you don't have the space. You just don't have the space. You can't mimic a natural system when you don't have the space or the property or that place to put the fish and to put the channels. Again, same spot. So here's what I think we need, the single improvement that we need to make. Your basin plan suggests, comes very close to requiring, the language is a little vague, but it does use the word shall, a 30-foot buffer area between undisturbed soil and land disturbance activities. Certainly, agriculture is a land disturbance activity. I don't think there's any question about that. So there is nothing in the channel maintenance program right now that says when you're all said and done and you've done all these secondary and tertiary channels, all that there is a requirement, as I've read it, that there be, again, a 10-foot buffer strip. Well, what happens when you're in a section where you don't have secondary channels or the river? I want something in this plan that says there shall be a 30-foot buffer between irrigated agriculture and the channel and the channel maintenance activity. There needs to be cover for fish to get under and through so that they get shade, so that they get lower stream flows, all those things. And so all I'm saying is make this plan consistent with your basin plan, which if you ask me, but I'm not the lawyer, is frankly part of what you need to do. Is to be consistent with the basin plan. And the basin plan says a 30-foot buffer, and we would like to see a 30-foot buffer, a requirement for a 30-foot buffer in this plan. That doesn't mean that you have to line every primary and secondary channel with 30 feet. It means that we want 30 feet of buffer between agriculture, land disturbance activities, and the river channel. That's what we want. The other impediment I should mention to me getting on this to being supportive is we've asked several times both the Nature Conservancy and Monterey County Water Resources Agency to get us on the property so that we can tour the property. It's never happened. I just don't understand why not. But we've said that we want to bring in a consultant to review what is going on out there, and we've simply been denied. We'd love to do it. We want to support channel maintenance. We want to tour what is being done, and we want a 30-foot buffer. Phase one has been permitted. You still have both the 401 and 404 permits that need to be stepwise taken for phase two. Please require that 30 feet of buffer be written into phase two. And you'll make me a very happy guy, and I will support the project. I will trumpet the project, and I will think it's a model of both channel maintenance and habitat restoration and fisheries restoration on the Salinas River. Without 30 feet of buffer, we will oppose this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shemek. And we have one more speaker card, Abby Taylor. And it'll be 3 minutes, please.
Quick question, if I could, while Abby is coming up. Ken, do we have the permit that Mr. Shimmick was referring to for phase two, is that not our 401 cert? Because that just, so that's what he's referring to. He's nodding his head in
so
the back.
So we've issued the 401 for phase one, which is the
right.
demonstration.
Right.
We have not begun the regulatory committee meetings yet. The other parties, the technical committees, are finishing up their work, and when that's done, then which is I think it's October is when the technical committees are supposed to start meeting. Permitting meeting, yeah. So that hasn't even started. That would be for phase two, and that would
so
be for our.
Good question that he raises is this a requirement of our basin plan?
I'm going to ask Phil or Lisa to come up, and I can't answer the question.
Our basin plan talks about a 30-foot buffer between any kind of land disturbing activity and any water, any creek. It's kind of vague in the language. You know, we'd have to almost put it up and look at the language because it's not real direct in saying that it's a 30-foot buffer no matter what and that's it. It's a little bit more vague than that. But as you probably know, that requirement hasn't been implemented throughout our region. I mean, there's people farming up to the edge of the river and have been for who knows how long. And so to go those landowners and say you need to stop that and move back 30 feet, you know, we'd have to, you know, to implement that throughout the region would be a massive undertaking.
Well, I'm not even sure if it would even be legal under the federal regs, right? Because historically, if you're farming something like a wetlands or something, if there's historical precedence, they can continue doing that.
Yeah, I think we'd have to look into it more closely.
Well, maybe you guys could report back to us on that. And
well, I'm pretty sure, but I'm almost positive about we can look into it, but I'm almost positive that, I mean, having worked on the wetlands policy for the state board is if a farmer abandons, say, a wetlands and the wetlands grows back and is restored, then you can protect it. But as long as he continues to farm that land, there's an agricultural exemption in the federal regs.
Okay.
And I'm just saying that if they are working, I mean, literally, historically, if they've been working land and it's right up to the stream bed, there's an exception for ag in the federal regs. That's just the way it is. And I know from all the discussions that have occurred at State Board, and this policy has been in development for 5 years, that is not going to change.
Does that, Jessica, trump our basin plan?
Yes, it's federal.
Yes, at this point it does. I was trying to look through our basin plan, and I don't have it memorized, so I don't know exactly where that, the 30-foot recommendation, where it is in the basin plan, but I can look into it further.
We can look into it and come back with a more succinct and precise answer for you at the next November
okay.
meeting.
Just to be
long.
Clear, though, it sounds like, Ken, you and Mr. Shimmick are talking about two different things. You're talking about if requiring a 30-foot buffer zone that requires pushing back the land that's being tilled.
You can't do that.
Right. And Mr. Shimmick is talking about requiring a 30-foot buffer zone that starts at the edge of the land that's currently being tilled and moves towards the center of the channel.
I don't know if that's what he's asking or not. I'm not clear on that.
I'll work with Steve to make sure I understand what
to make
what
sure
he's
we answer
seeking.
The question
and I would help. Actually, I would like if before staff works with Steve, knowing I think it's really important to get this stuff in writing, I'd like Steve to send us a letter describing precisely what he is, what he's looking for. I'd like it in writing so that we because too often conversations, you know, things are lost in translation. So if he has some issues, I'd prefer to have his request and his justification in writing.
Okay. So, Abby, 3 minutes, please.
Hi, Abby Taylor Silva, grower shipper. It's been mentioned grower shipper has been an active participant in this, and it's been a pleasure. It's been a really wonderful collaboration. I've been really proud and happy to work with everyone up here and be a part of it. I want to address this 30-foot buffer discussion a little bit further. And actually, one of the photographs that was put up by Mr. Schimmick and was talked about, he said that this was one of the most maintained areas, and yet it flooded. And he's right. Absolutely. And that is why we're going into this new system. So I wish that we could show you some of the modeling that's being done. It's fascinating. And I will say for my members, it is fascinating to watch in a 5-year or a 10-year what might happen and why what we're talking about in this multi-benefit approach is so much more valuable than what they might have done in the past is. So that's absolutely true. When we talk about this 30-foot buffer and why I'm a little concerned about kind of creating a blanket statement about a buffer is we're in this program really looking to mimic the natural channel to meet multiple objectives. And one of the most challenging areas that we're talking about is the constrained reach, in that if you're familiar with Salinas, we're talking about Highway 68 through Davis Road up to the lagoon. And I'm concerned about what mandating a 30-foot buffer might do in that area where we have a smaller space to be working with and how it might affect our ability to actually preserve positive, good habitat while also reducing flood risk. And just to note, the vegetation in the channel is variable, and it's not all of similar quality. There is lots of arundo, and our program is really focusing on avoiding good habitat, and a one-size-fits-all approach on a buffer is not going to help us achieve that multi-benefit resource value. Just to end, I mean, this is a really, it's a holistic program. I think buffers are an older tool and for a straight line engineering program like that which we had before. And this is a program and a model that is, it's looking at lots of different things. And to just focus on one facet without looking at it as a whole, it's been a failure that we've done in the past, and I really don't want us to see us do it again. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Abby. So this wraps up this item.